I'm Natalie Morales of 48 Hours. So much of our reporting focuses on the stories of victims who didn't survive. But what about those who lived to tell?
I survived a violent home invasion. There's no earthly reason why I'm alive.
From 48 Hours, this is It Could Have Been Me.
It makes you grateful for everything you have, you know.
You can follow and listen to It Could Have Been Me on Tuesdays in the 48 Hours podcast feed on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Spiegel and Holmes.
Jim Ozarski covers the Bucks for the Journal Sentinel. He is the South Suburbs champion.
First of all, thanks for having me. I always enjoy being on with you, Lawrence, king of Evergreen Park. Appreciate that. Look, Matt.
Afternoons on the Score.
Last summer, I was in Las Vegas. It was 114 degrees. 114 degrees. You can actually hear the sun at that point. Didn't feel safe. I was like, are we supposed to be here? It's how casually Las Vegas residents just went about their day in that heat. It was like, you're like, let's play frisbee. Time to walk the dog. I was like, get inside! The earth is on fire! Get inside and beg for God's forgiveness. You've obviously angered him. That's why Vegas is called Sin City. It's the same temperature as hell.
That's the great Jim Gaffigan. I am Rami Makhlouf, live from the Hyundai Score Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers and live from Sin City, where, yes, it is hot as hell, is half the namesake of this very show. It is the one, the only, Lawrence Holmes. Lawrence, how are you this afternoon, my friend?
Rami, first of all, can you guys hear me? I just want to make sure.
We got you. We got you.
All right, good. Good. I'm at the Thomas and Mack Center right now watching the Nets and the Thunder play their summer league game. You may get cameos inside of me being on the air. Shakia Taylor is like, she's here hanging out with me and introducing me to everyone. So Shakia Taylor and Tony Jones are on my left, right, from The Athletic. And then I'm going to move the camera. So be ready, Connor. Look who I found on my right.
Hey.
Sean Hyken. Sean Hyken is over here. So I'm surrounded by all of the cool NBA people. And I am just trying to get a vibe and catch a vibe. But it's damn hot out here, Rami. I'm kind of used to it. I've been out in Phoenix during this time of year where it's 114 degrees. But it really doesn't hit you until the Uber driver doesn't really hook you up with the AC. So
what?
Getting over here. Yeah. They keep it on the low because they're trying to conserve gas. Like, I get that. But my drive in from Circa to over the Thomas and Mack Center, it's only about like 15 minutes or whatever. And by the end of it, I was like, oh, got to get that water because it is blazing everywhere in the sun. So it takes a lot to get
Lawrence.
Through. But I've made it now. So.
I understand that they're trying to conserve gas and these guys they're trying to earn a living doing the Uber thing. It's 108 degrees outside, man. Turn up the AC. What are you doing?
Rami, I'm with you 100%. And for the most part, that's been my experience. Like the airport ride to Circa was nice and comfortable, but the ride to the Thomas and Mack. You know, I still hit them with the 5 stars because, you know, people out here are just trying to make a living.
Sure,
but,
yeah.
But I'm definitely going to make a point on my way back to Circa that I'm going to need that AC on cranked.
Yeah, I might have said something, Lauren, and it might have been a 4.5 if it was me and the AC was. I don't know if he might be a 4.5. I was the Dominican Republic last year, and it was hot, man. It was hot, and they don't have the same, I think, standards that your car has to meet to be an Uber driver in the DR
yeah.
that we have here in the States. So a lot of those cars, I think, just didn't have air conditioning. And I don't speak Spanish, so I didn't say a thing. I just shut my mouth and bared the heat. But if I'm in Vegas and it's 109, 110 degrees out, man, you got to crank that AC if you want a tip and a good rating from me. I'm sorry.
We're at the time of the year in the desert where they put oven mitts on door handles.
That's serious. Crazy. That's wild.
Bobby, I'm serious. Like, that's real talk. Like, that is in Phoenix for sure, that's what they do. And I've seen it out here in Vegas as well. Because if you have like metal handles and your thing is in the sun, then you know people are gonna burn their hand and they're gonna sue you. So you have to make sure that people's hands are gonna be protected.
Are you a guy who handles the heat well? Because I do not, Lawrence. I sweat a lot.
It's weird because I do spend a lot of time out west.
Okay.
I'm not cut out for it though. Like I'll say this. I do understand the concept of it's a dry heat, okay? Like, I do get that. And whether you're in Vegas or Salt Lake City or Phoenix, at night, if you go out to eat somewhere and it's 90 degrees, it doesn't feel as bad. A lot of places have misters, you know, like they have the water, mist water. Like, it's not that bad, but it's hell during the day. Like it is, you basically have to reverse engineer it for like what Chicago is like in the winter.
Yes.
Where people are just driving to a place and the only time that they're getting outside is when they're getting out of their car. Like that's it.
Yeah, that would be me. That would be me, Lawrence. I'm not going nowhere if it's 108 degrees. I'm just staying right wherever there is AC. I'm staying right there. You know, I lived in Sacramento for a minute, and it was the hottest summer on record when I lived in Sacramento, Lawrence. It hit 118 degrees. And people were trying to hit me with that dry heat mess. And I was like, my air fryer is dry heat, too. I'm not sticking my head in there. That doesn't help when it's 108 degrees out that it's dry.
Yeah, once you get to about 107, 108, like, that's where the concept of the dry heat goes out the window.
Yeah, for
like,
real.
It doesn't matter anymore. Shake was here trying to explain to Sean that he shouldn't be walking from his hotel over to the Thomas and Mack Center because, you know, one, it's 108 degrees. Two, he's very fair skinned. So he shouldn't be like sun exposure should not be a thing that you're out here trying to do past 10 a.m. Like at Stadium Swim at Circa, I told Tanny this. I told Speegs this. If you get out there 8:30, 9 o'clock in the morning, you spend a half an hour at the pool at Stadium Swim, it's so dope. But then what happens, and this happens in a lot of places in Vegas, once we get to about 11 o'clock, then you're not just – you're getting Tatooine. You're getting two suns. you're getting the regular sun, and then you're getting the sun off of the buildings. And with that double exposure, it doesn't make any sense to do anything.
All right, Lawrence, let's get into the reason that you're out there in this heat, and that's the NBA Summer League. You texted our little group chat we got going for the show earlier that the room was already buzzing, and this was, what, an hour and a half ago? Set the scene for us a little bit out there at the Summer League.
So you can hear a little bit of it right now. Like, the fact, I think everyone's here trying to get here early because the next game after this one is going to be Bronny versus Cooper Flagg. And so I was surprised because I walked in during the T-Wolves Pelicans game and I wanted to see Derrick Queen play, Terrence Shannon Jr. I'll get to them in a minute. But that's what I was trying to do. And I figured I got here early enough where I wasn't going to feel kind of the buzz. But with the broadcast going on, you know, these games are being broadcast and the fact that the number one pick in the draft is going to be playing here in a little bit, and it's Bronny. This, the Thomas and Mack Center holds about 20,000 people. The bottom bowl is pretty much full. The top bowl, not so much, but the bottom bowl is pretty much full, and that's a little bit surprising. I do not expect that to be the case tomorrow night when the Bulls play the Raptors, but even now, like, you guys can probably hear, like, the background of people cheering. And it's the Nets-Thunder Summer League game. So, and, you know, the Nets are going to probably – like, they drafted five rookies this year. And it's possible that you could have those five guys starting for Brooklyn this year. But it's wild. Like, some of the weird stuff that you see, you just, like, look on the rosters. You're like, oh, well, this person is coaching this team. Like, for example, Rami, Corey Brewer. You want to feel old? Corey Brewer is coaching the Pelicans summer league team.
No, that's, real? For
that's
real?
How old we are now, Rami. Yeah.
Good Lord. Good Lord. I but yeah, you do see that at the summer league. That's kind of, that's where a lot of these former players that are trying to break into coaching or have just started to break into coaching and are on a staff somewhere. That's where a lot of them get sort of their first taste of head coaching out there in Vegas.
Yeah, and Chicago fans, well, they'll be interested in the Bulls game because it'll be James Wade who is coaching the Raptors summer league team. He who used to be the head coach of the Chicago Sky and abandoned the Chicago Sky to take an assistant job with Toronto.
Wow. So you'll be seeing him out there. People keep billing this as Cooper Flagg versus Bronny. I'm not somebody who's come down that hard on Bronny. I think he's gotten a lot of undue hate and heat just for being LeBron James' son. You know what I mean? But are people really there to see Bronny, Lawrence, from what you're hearing and who you're talking? I know Cooper Flagg is the draw. Are people really there to see Bronny?
Yeah, I mean, you walk in and there are all sorts of people who are excited about it. And not that it is a matchup, because it's a summer league game. Guys are trying to figure it out. And by this point, you know, Bronny, he's not a vet, but he at least has the NBA experience of playing in the games. So if you look at the jersey sales on Bronny's, one of the more popular players in the NBA, especially for where he got drafted at. I mean, he made a lot of money off of jersey sales. I mean,
a lot of that is on his dad. And again, I don't want to be too hard on him, for it's not his fault that he's LeBron James' son. You know what I mean? But I just is he a draw?
I mean, but people love when you're trying to figure out like what's something to do while you're here. Now, like most of us, we're not as lucky as Shake. Shake went to the Nas concert last night.
Nice.
She had a great time at the concert. I didn't get the invite, but I also wasn't in town. So there's a lot of stuff to do in Vegas. But if you're a hoop head, like, this is the place to be. And getting your first glimpse of a guy like Cooper Flagg, for example, or maybe you're not going to go see a Lakers game and you want to see, is Bronny even worthy of being an NBA player? And so he's out here. Like, when I walked in, there were two guys that I wanted to pay close attention to. We've been talking since March about Derek Queen.
Yeah.
And I love him. I was hoping that the Bulls would draft Derek Queen, and they had a chance, and they chose not to. The Pelicans moved up, and they drafted Derek Queen. And watching him on the floor tonight, it took him a little while to get himself ready. Like, I felt like, oh, he wasn't quite, like, conditionally ready for this. But then he came on, and he finished the game with 13 points, 10 rebounds, and 3 assists. And that most of that was done in the second half of the game. And you can see that he wants to show that he can handle the ball. He wants to show that an offense can run through him. He wants to show that he's got the skills of a guard in a center's body. So watching that play out was fun. And the same thing for when we see Noah Esenway tomorrow with the Bulls. Kind of seeing, like, what does he look like against other draftees, other NBA-type players. And the other player that I thought really showed out, Terrence Shannon Jr. from Illinois.
I was just going to ask you about that. Yep.
Yeah, I mean, he played 32 games in the league, so he should look more advanced than other people that are out here. But I was talking to our friend Rick Camp, and Rick Camp said that he had placed a bet on Terrence Shannon Jr. to be Summer League MVP, which to me says a couple of things. One, good pick. Two, Rick is a degenerate gambler, because why are you betting on MVP of the Summer League? But Terrence Shannon Jr. finished with 20 points, 6 rebounds, and 9 assists, and he looks more advanced and further ahead than other people who are on the floor.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about that, because there are plenty of guys that do get minutes in the league that still go and play at the summer league. Terrence Shannon Jr. being one of them. Can you see it when they're out there on the court that they have that extra, I don't know, speed or level or just understanding of the game from having that pro experience?
Yeah, and I think so. I think that you have so many guys that are just trying to get themselves used to what the NBA life is like, that there is some of that. And guys that have played in the league, that have played minutes, that understand spacing, understanding sharing the ball, and maybe they understand exactly what you're supposed to be doing here, like trying to be your best self, showing that you can share, like all of that stuff that you do here at Summer League. Just the pacing of the game, it seemed a lot slower for Terrence Shannon Jr. than it did for true rookies. And the Bulls, I think they're going to allow Modest to play one game here. And you'll probably see it with Modest tomorrow night too, if that's the game that they choose to let him play. Where the guy played a ton of games in the league against guys who are for sure on NBA rosters versus guys who are hoping to just kind of stick on NBA rosters, or guys who are just getting their first taste of what this life is like.
Lawrence, I honestly did not know you could bet on NBA Summer League MVP. I didn't know that was a thing.
I mean, if there's an opportunity to be able to bet on some of this stuff, you know Rick Camp is going to find it.
And Rick Camp in studio.
I'm so happy that he did, and he told me that little nugget, because I think he got him at like plus 400 or plus 4,000. So, So I am now rooting for Terrence Shannon Jr. for a number of reasons. And one of them is so that Rick Camp can get paid.
I want to meet the guy who sets the odds for NBA Summer League MVP. I want him to walk me through his process on how he comes to those conclusions.
Hey, man. I'll put in for my guy, Javon Freeman Liberty, too, who's going to be on the Bulls roster, who played at DePaul. Put him on the list of possibles. I'm guessing that he's probably plus 8,000 to be Summer League MVP.
That is Lawrence Holmes out there in Las Vegas at the NBA Summer League. I didn't need to tell you that. He's half of the name of this show. I didn't need to tell you who he was. But we are live at the Summer League. Going to talk more about it, maybe what Lawrence is looking for, more in detail from the Bulls when they start their Summer League action tomorrow. We'll keep it going. You're listening to Spiegel and Holmes on 670 The Score and the Odyssey app and the iHeartRadio apps. And back right after this.
I'm Natalie Morales of 48 Hours. So much of our reporting focuses on the stories of victims who didn't survive. But what about those who live to tell?
I survived a violent home invasion. There's no earthly reason why I'm alive.
From 48 Hours, this is It Could Have Been Me.
It makes you grateful for everything you have, you know.
You can follow and listen to It Could Have Been Me on Tuesdays in the 48 Hours podcast feed on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Listen to the Spiegel and Holmes show on the Odyssey and iHeartRadio apps.
It is the Spiegel and Holmes show. Rami Makhlouf in for Matt Spiegel this afternoon. I was in for Spiegel and Holmes for the first couple hours of the show, but Lawrence has joined us live from blazing hot Las Vegas and the NBA Summer League at the Thomas and Mack Center, and taking in all the festivities out there with all the stars of the NBA and NBA media out there in the desert. Lawrence, I spent a good portion of the first couple hours of the show talking Cubs with our listeners and took some calls, took some texts. Folks, I wouldn't say nervous, but a little bit antsy to see something happen before the trade deadline, with the Brewers sort of nipping at their heels, knocking on the door in the NL Central. But you said you had some Cubs thoughts that you wanted to bounce off me, my friend.
I do want to talk about the Brewers thing, but I want to go back because, like, once I got settled here, like, yes. once I got off the plane, I went and checked in at Circa, and I headed over to the Thomas and Mack Center. I'm like, all right, this is my first time at NBA Summer League, so I don't know anything. Like, luckily, I have good friends in the industry like Shakia Taylor that are, like, introducing me to people and being like, no, I'll just do this. I finally got to a place where I was like, I think that the Wi-Fi is strong enough here that I can do the show, because that was, like, my first concern.
Sure.
I sit down here and I'm like, all right, let me listen to see what Rami's doing, make sure he doesn't destroy the show while Speegs and I are gone. And I wasn't
worried.
That's
a fair concern. That's a fair concern, I will say.
No, we've known each other a long time. You're a really terrific talk show host. So I was
when
we were able to get you, I was like, this is great. And then I heard you take a call from a dude that was trying to tell you that he has got Pete Crow Armstrong figured out. And that he wanted you to make sure that you were looking at Pete's top hand. And I'm like, I know that I took a flight and that can be discombobulating, right? Like, you don't always know what's going on or where you're from. All I know is that the Cubs game that I watched today, Pete Crow Armstrong, MVP candidate, hit two bombs.
Yeah,
today.
He did. Yeah, he did. Yep.
And even if it hadn't just been him hitting two bombs today, he is MVP candidate Pete Crow Armstrong.
Yes, yeah.
And I couldn't – it was almost like that guy, while Pete – he look, it peaks and valleys, right, during a baseball season.
Sure.
It looks like he clearly wanted to talk about Pete during a valley, and he couldn't get in. So he decided to call you – during a week, and was out here like, this guy's got it all wrong. Yeah, this guy might win MVP, but he's got it all wrong. And he hit two bombs as the Cubs offense exploded today.
He just couldn't wait any longer, Lawrence. He noticed that top hand probably last year. You know what I mean? He noticed the top hand, and there was something not quite right about that top. And he was just waiting and waiting and waiting for PCA to struggle, and he didn't. And finally, our caller was just, you know what? I got to get this off my chest. I'm going to call and talk about Pete Crow Armstrong's top hand, even though he had two home runs today, 25 on the season, and is maybe the front runner for MVP in the National League. Yeah.
Yeah. We were joking about this on yesterday's show that there's always, like, kind of that call, and the timing of it just was bad. It's not a terrible thought, right?
No.
Like, Pete is still trying to establish himself as a player. So it's not a terrible thought. It just seems so weird that today of all days, like, he couldn't wait to get that take out. And it was like, that take doesn't seem to make a lot of sense.
Yeah, it was bad timing, you know, in comedy and in radio and in life, Lawrence. You need good timing. And that right there was just bad timing on the part of that call.
No doubt. All right. So listen, this is kind of what I wanted to get to.
Okay.
I wanted to ask you this question, and if people want to text in or inside the mob, which I don't think I can get the text, but I can see some of the things inside the mob, if they want to speak on this. But I wanted to get your opinion on it first, because we all know you're Mr. Cub, and yep. You were Mr. Cub while you were living in Milwaukee. So you're
never
the perfect person to ask about this, because you know that Brewers organization really well, too.
Mm-hmm.
Are you the Cub fan ready for a pennant race? Like, for real, because Bleep was sweet about a week and a half ago. There was a nice, a six-game lead or whatever in the National League Central. You had beaten the Cardinals and split that four-game series. Then the Cardinals came here and got their butts kicked, all that stuff. But then you look up and, like, the Brewers won't go away, and they're getting better. And now there's talk of them actually being a contender to bring people in that can help them be a team that might be able to win the National League and not just the National League Central. What I mean by, are you ready for it? I'm not asking, are you ready for some football? That's someone else's line. What I mean is, are you ready for the stress of that? And it's good stress, you know, like fan stress can be good when you have a team that's entertaining and competitive. There's the idea of like the good stress of trying to win a division and get yourself established in the playoffs. Are you ready to scoreboard watch and check on what Andrew Vaughn is doing for the Brewers every night as we make it through the rest of the summer?
Speaking of Andrew Vaughn, be real quick before I answer your question. Our mutual friend, Steve Sparky Pfeiffer, one of the hosts on The Fan out there in Milwaukee, he wanted me to personally thank you and the White Sox, Lawrence, for Andrew Vaughn and for trading him to the Milwaukee Brewers. But since
you're welcome, because he wasn't doing anything for the White Sox. And my whole feeling on the guys leaving the White Sox thing is it's been like 50-50. Some guys have succeeded because they needed the change of scenery, and some guys have just been what they've been. So, like, you look at a guy like Gavin Sheets, for example. He's had an incredible year for San Diego, and they found the perfect way to use him. And then you look at Eloy, and Eloy, there was like a glimpse of hope when he went to Baltimore, but he clearly couldn't establish himself. Tim Anderson struggled. You know, Yoan Moncada was okay, but then the Moncada thing happened. He got hurt. So I'm for anyone that can save themselves, that needs a little bit of a different place to be, a change of scenery. I'm rooting for all of those guys to go out and succeed. So I'm happy for Andrew Vaughn that he's succeeding. And I know that could be detrimental to the Cubs, but there hasn't been a run, and Tanny brought this up yesterday. There hasn't really been a point during Andrew Vaughn's White Sox career where he carried the team. You know what I mean? Like, there have been moments where he's been all right, but there was never a moment where you're like, oh, he has turned into the guy that was drafted number 3 overall. But I hope that he does well, and I hope that I mean, even if Luis Robert were to be traded over the next few days, I'd be happy for Luis, because I think that all of those guys need a different place. Like, it's not even that it's anyone's fault necessarily. It's just a change of scenery would be helpful.
Sure. But to answer your question, Lawrence, of am I ready for a pennant race? And like Lawrence said, get in on the show, 312-644-6767. I am. And the reason that I am, and specifically I'm ready for a pennant race with the Brewers, is I expected this, man. Even when the Cubs got off to the blazing hot start that they did, and the Brewers kind of struggled out of the gates, as they had a lot of pitching injuries. They were still trying to figure out how to fill the void of Willy Adames, their shortstop, their all-star shortstop who left for the Giants in the offseason. They were very much trying to figure things out for about the first month of the season. But while other people were talking, I don't know, people thought the Reds might be something this year when they hired Terry Francona and made some of the moves that they did in the offseason. I never bought the Reds. Folks jumped on the Cardinals when they got off to the hot start, and they were sort of nipping at the Cubs' heels despite the Cubs' hot start. I wasn't really buying the Cardinals and expected them.
I figured that out, Rami. Like, the Cardinals are not good. And the thing that I said to Speaks a couple of days ago is that I actually expect the Reds to finish ahead of the Cardinals this year. I think that the Francona effect is real, and he'll have them playing better. But the Brewers, man, organizationally, they're just strong. And when you take someone as good as Craig Counsell away from an organization, and you still are out here winning a division. And the Yelich thing, like him not being quite himself early on in the season, all the injuries that you talked about, like that first month of Brewers baseball was a disaster.
Yep.
And now they have fixed all of that stuff. So what's the secret sauce, Rami? You're up there, you're dealing with those people all the time. What do they know that the Cubs don't have?
It's like you said, it's organizational, Lawrence, and it's from top to bottom. Yeah, and you're 100% right. I think it starts, I was finding myself in a strange position for that first month of the season, Lawrence, which was as a Cubs fan talking Brewers fans off the ledge and living in Milwaukee and doing the work that I do for the fan up here. I was like, man, you guys are going to be all right. You're going to be right there in the mix when all is said and done, because you always are. And that's sort of the only way to explain what the Brewers do is they just find a way to do it. And I know that's not the greatest answer. That's not the most detailed answer that I can give on that. But I say that because it seems like you said, whether it's losing the manager in Craig Counsell, they lost their general manager and president of baseball operations in David Stearns when Steve Cohen gave him $1 billion to go and be their general manager and president of baseball operations for the Mets out there in New York. They lose Willy Adames this offseason, their star shortstop. In the past few years, they've lost Corbin Burnes, who was a Cy Young candidate for them. They traded Josh Hader to the Astros, who was and now is again the best closer in the game, and they find ways to always fill whatever hole is opened up in their organization. And whether it's finding one guy who steps up and fills that production, or it's finding a number of guys in a platoon at a particular position, or just a few different guys around the field getting a little bit more production from them on a year-to-year basis, they always seem to just find a way to fill whatever void it is that's opened with all these guys that leave and simply because of money. They don't have the spending power that the Cubs do, and they never will. They have the brain power up there in Milwaukee. They're very much like the Tampa Bay Rays of the Midwest. You know, one of those teams that doesn't have the big budget for their roster, but their front office, their scouting and development department, it's all top notch, man. And especially when you talk about pitching up there in Milwaukee, I always say there's, if you're a Wisconsin sports fan, there's two things you can count on. The Packers are going to draft and develop good offensive linemen, and the Brewers are going to draft and develop good pitchers. And I don't know where they find these guys. I don't know what they're doing. They have the Cubs have this pitching lab that they send guys to work in. They had that in Milwaukee and at their spring training facility, I don't know, 10 years ago, maybe more than that, where they were sending guys to go and work in like top secret conditions, not telling anybody what they're doing, what pitches they're working on, what they're doing physically. But they have some sort of secret sauce in their scouting and development, and especially their scouting and development of pitchers, that the rest of the league would love to know what it is exactly they're doing and how they're cooking this up. I honestly think that's a big part of the reason that the Cubs stole Craig Counsell away. They were like, hey, if this guy could come in here and give us some inside info on what they're doing up there in Milwaukee and how they keep coming up with answers to every question and every problem that pops up, add that to the money that we can spend, and we should have a firm upper hand in the division. And it makes sense. It makes a lot of sense. But that firm upper hand has not taken hold just yet, Lawrence. And I hope it does in the next few years. But yeah, they got something, I don't want to say special cooking, because they're not, you know, World Series favorites, but they have something special cooking in the sense that year in and year out, they can answer all the questions that need answering. And if it's not right out of the gates, they'll figure it out as the season goes along, as we've seen them do this year.
Well, that's what I wanted to kind of ask you about is, you know, CeCe Sabathia, that was what, 17 years ago?
Yeah.
Is this the year where Milwaukee says, you know what, we're going to make a move? Like, we're not just going to rely on like the little move here or there that they've been so brilliant at. Is this the year where they say, we're not going to let the Cubs make the big move that they want to make because we'll step in front of it?
I don't know that you'll see a CeCe Sabathia-like move, but Tanny and Alex were telling me before we started the show in our little pre-show meeting, I hadn't seen this, that they're sniffing around Alex Bregman a little bit. I don't know if that's a CC Sabathia level move, but that would fill a big hole for them at third base and in that lineup. And Lawrence, that would really, really sting if Alex Bregman was traded to the White Sox and they went on to win this division, and the Cubs were watching them celebrate when they basically sat out of the Alex Bregman sweepstakes and gave him the fourth best offer that he saw in free agency. I could see them making a move like that.
So let's go back to the stress.
Okay.
Are you ready? Are you ready for the stress of an actual pennant race in the second half of the season?
Yeah, I think I am, and because I expected it. I never expected the Brewers to go away or to go quietly into the night. I thought they'd be there at the end, and now they're showing you why. So yeah, I was preparing myself for this, even when the Cubs were, you know, the hottest team in baseball for the first month and a half, and looked like they were putting some distance between themselves and, well, not the whole division, but putting some distance between them and the Brewers. I was looking at it and going, the Brewers will be there when all is said and done. So yeah, this isn't surprising or shocking to me. It's what I expected, and so yeah, for that reason, I'm prepared for this, man. I'm ready for it.
You know what's crazy? Like, Spiegs and I have been talking about some stuff that we want to do in the fall. And obviously, like, everyone's super excited about the Bears and this upcoming season, Ben Johnson. By the way, I highly recommend for Bears fans, if they want to get to know Ben Johnson a little bit, the new season of Quarterback is out on Netflix, and Jared Goff is one of the three quarterbacks.
Oh.
And there isn't a ton of Ben Johnson, but there's a ton of philosophy, and there's a ton of all the things that Jared Goff does to get himself prepared to run that offense that I think Bears fans will find interesting. Anyway, Speeds and I we're planning another trip out here, and we're going to be at Circa. The Bears are playing against the Raiders. Ooh. And we were looking at the calendar of when we're thinking of going, and we're like, wait a minute, that could be a Cubs clinch scenario along with a Bears weekend. And so, like, the concept of, like, the Cubs being this good and being competitive and being a team that could win the National League, it's super exciting when you marry that to how this town goes crazy for the Bears. It would really be nice to have a fall where there are expectations on two teams at the same time. And we're like, wait, how do we, like, as a show, do we split that up? Like, if we're supposed to be out there for Bears Raiders, or about out here for Bears Raiders weekend, am I out here with the Bears and is Speegs back with the Cubs? Like, all of, and like, that's super exciting, man. That's what this kind of hinterland that we've been in with Chicago sports.
Yeah.
If we got that type of juice from two of the teams, considering the situations that the other teams are in, considering that the White Sox are rebuilding, the Blackhawks are rebuilding, the Bulls are rebuilding, the Sky are not very good right now. To have that this fall, I think, is so exciting.
Yeah, it would be nice. It'd be nice to have rich people problems as a sports fan in Chicago for the first time in a long time, wouldn't it?
Yes, it would be. By the way, I just got this, and I'm excited for the Score listener on this. It was announced today that Paul McCartney and his Got Back tour will make their return to North America this fall. They will play at United Center on November 24th and November 25th. Tickets go on sale to the public next Friday, July 18th at 10 a.m. Central. Tune into our show next week for a chance to win a pair of tickets to see Paul McCartney in Chicago before you can buy them. So the Spiegel and Holmes show is going to give you Paul McCartney tickets next week. Let's go.
As I said earlier, when I gave away some fish tickets, Lawrence, if you want to take me with when you win those Paul McCartney tickets, I'm free that day. It's on July. I'll be there. If you need somebody to go with you, July 18th, on November 25th, and you need a companion to the Paul McCartney concert, I will be that guy. I'll take the hit. We got to hit a quick break. On the other side, another Chicago sports legend was lost, and if he wasn't a legend for what he did on the field, He was a legend for what he did off the field, and you'll hear it on Spiegel and Holmes right here on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score right after this.
I'm Natalie Morales of 48 Hours. So much of our reporting focuses on the stories of victims who didn't survive. But what about those who live to tell?
I survived a violent home invasion. There's no earthly reason why I'm alive.
From 48 Hours, this is It Could Have Been Me.
It makes you grateful for everything you have, you know.
You can follow and listen to It Could Have Been Me on Tuesdays in the 48 Hours podcast feed on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Time for another classic 670 flashback.
I appreciate you having me on, and I will always talk about the Lee Elia rant anytime I'm asked. So I'm here for it. So thank you for having me on, and rest in peace, Les.
That was Paul Konerko, former White Sox first baseman. This is Spiegel and Holmes on 670 The Score and the Odyssey and iHeartRadio apps. Rami Makhlouf here in for Spiegs this afternoon. Lawrence in Las Vegas at the NBA Summer League. And Lee Elia passed away today at the age of 87 years old. 50 years in Major League Baseball at some level, in some form or fashion, starting with, and I didn't know this, Lawrence, I don't know about you, his debut as a shortstop for the White Sox in April 1966 was where he first broke into the Major League. You did know that?
Yes, I did. And then the thing is that part of the reason that we play the Konerko talking about Les is because Les, that's proprietary audio that he got. Oh. Les was the only person that had the audio of Lee Elia. He's literally the only reporter, only electronic reporter who saved that classic rant. So whenever you talk about Lee Elia, you kind of have to mention Les Grobstein, because Les is the one that brought all of that sound to us, that great rant that, you know, half of them don't even work. All of that yep. great stuff. That's because of our guy, Grobber.
I can't imagine there's anybody out there who hasn't heard the legendary rant, especially listeners of The Score and Les Grobstein. But, yeah, manage the Cubs, manage the Phillies. But I think most people, if you know the name Lee Elia, it's because of this.
I'll tell you one thing. I hope we get hotter just to stuff it up than 3,000 people that show up every day. Because if they're the real Chicago fans, they can kiss my ass right downtown and print it. They're really, really behind you around here. My ass. What am I supposed to do? Go out there and let my players get destroyed every day and be quiet about it for the nickel dime people to show up? The don't even work. That's why they're out at the game. They only go out and get a job and find out what it's like to go out there and a living. 85% of the world's working. The other 15 come out here. The playground for the rip them like the players. Got guys busting their ass and them people too. And that's because my ass. They talk about the great support that the players get around here. I haven't seen it this year. The name of the game is hit the ball, catch the ball, and get the job done. Right now, we have more losses than we have wins. The changes that have happened in the Cub organization are multifold. All right, they don't show because we're 5-14. And unfortunately, that's the criteria of them dumb 15% that come out to day baseball. The other 85% are earning a living. Take more than a 5-13 or 5-14 to destroy the makeup of this club. I guarantee you that. There's some pros out there that want to play this game. But you're stuck in a stigma of the Dodgers and the Phillies and the Cardinals and all that sheep. All these editorials about say and the Philly-itis and all that shit, it's sickening. It's unbelievable. It really is. It's a disheartening situation we're in right now. 5-14 doesn't negate all that work. Got 143 games left. What I'm trying to say is don't rip them guys out there. Rip me. If you want to rip somebody, rip my head. But don't rip them guys, because they're giving everything they can give. But once we hit that groove, it'll flow. And it will flow. The talent's there. I don't know how to make it any clearer to you. I'm frustrated. I'll guarantee you I'm frustrated. It'd be different if I walked in this room every day at 8:30 and saw a bunch of guys that didn't give a. They give a.
He's gone, and we couldn't do nothing about it.
So amazing. So amazing. RIP to Lee Ilya. RIP to our guy, Les Grobstein. That's amazing. This is a piece of Chicago sports history. Totally. Rami, thank you so much for answering the call. I was texting with Speaks today to see how he's doing. And we appreciate you stepping in while Speaks is out sick and I was traveling across the country. So much love to you for stepping in and holding down our show for us.
My absolute pleasure, Rami. Lawrence.
For Rami, for Alex, for Tanny, I'm Lawrence saying thank you so much for the love and support you show this show every single day. Spiegel and Holmes will be back tomorrow starting at 2 o'clock on The Score. Have a good night. See y'all in Vegas.
Hi, we apologize, ladies and gentlemen, for that presentation.
I'm Natalie Morales of 48 Hours. So much of our reporting focuses on the stories of victims who didn't survive. But what about those who live to tell?
I survived a violent home invasion. There's no earthly reason why I'm alive.
From 48 Hours, this is It Could Have Been Me.
It makes you grateful for everything you have, you know?
You can follow and listen to It Could Have Been Me on Tuesdays in the 48 Hours podcast feed on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.